Get ready for takeoff. This is a first class podcast. All things Winnipeg Jets hockey. The flight starts now. Welcome back to the first class podcast. All things Winnipeg Jets hockey. Part two of this week's podcast. Tim Bigelow along with Warren Smith. Let's get right back to the games.
The Jets then have the Florida Panthers coming to town. Florida was fourth in the Atlantic going into that game, 26-23-6. They had gone on a bit of a win streak. So they had won three games in a row, including a 6-3 win versus Calgary, 7-3 in their last 10, coming into the game against the Winnipeg Jets, getting healthier. Also helping them out was, in addition to James Reimer playing better of late and returning to health, Roberto Luongo also had returned to health, so they had both their goaltenders, their starter and their backup, available to them. And Reimer actually got the start against the Jets, but again, that's because Luongo had just played in the Calgary game.
So point something obvious out here before you get into it. You're starting to notice how many times we're getting backup goalies lately, and it's like that stretch we went through before where we had a bunch of backup goalies. All of a sudden, we're getting these backups. It's like, I sometimes wonder, it sounds weird, but it's like, are they worried that we're going to pump their starting goalie and it's going to fuck them up a little bit? Like, I know we've lost games here and there, but there's been a fair amount of games of 5, 6, 7 goals. And those games, when you let that many goals in, it gets in your head a little bit. I'm like, it's weird that as a team as high as the Jets are, we've seen a fair amount of backups the last month or two. Like, we've talked about it numerous times.
Well, earlier in the year, you could just say that they were expecting the game before that they're playing. Because a lot of times these teams are playing Minnesota, or they're playing Chicago, or they're playing Calgary or Edmonton before coming into Winnipeg. Now, sometimes they've got an extra day. Sometimes it's back-to-back. So in the mapping out early on, because the Jets, most people didn't have the Jets on the radar. Remember, the Edmonton Oilers are winning the Stanley Cup this year. Remember at the beginning of the year? That's what was going down. Because of that, I think early on in the year, we saw a lot of that because teams were prepping for Minnesota, who was going to be top, fighting for top in the Central Division, or the Calgary and Edmonton that were going to be the two best teams.
No, and on early in the season, I get what you're saying. I get how, like, early in the season, why they might have taken us for granted, and why they would start their best guys against those teams because of the expectation level of them and versus us early on in the season. That's and we at that time we talked about it a bit, but now it seems like we're going through another stretch, and this is a Jets team that's, you know, sitting at the top of the Central Division and right near the top of the Western Conference. I just find it way stranger now. Then it was kind of like, I get it to an extent, a little bit of disrespect. Now it's just kind of like, what's the mentality? It's just a little weird, that's all. And sometimes those backups have played amazing and beat us. This has happened. We've lost to a few backups this year. Let's be serious. It hasn't been all roses, but then we've pumped the shit out of other ones. And either way, it makes you think, like, what is going on here? But the thought process.
The thought process now might be the reverse argument. Teams really need points right now. So if they're playing in Minnesota or in Calgary before us, they're thinking they have a better chance to beat the Flames or beat the Wild or definitely beat the Oilers. And so now we're going to put our starter in for that game because you're right, they can play their starter, and that starter can get pumped. These three games, we saw the backups for all three teams. Now, to be quite honest with you, James Reimer is not this a guy that's only playing two games a year, right? I mean, the days of Roberto Luongo playing 60, 70 games are done too as well. He's only got a limited number because he's in the twilight of his career. Likewise, the game before we saw, but we also know that Varlamov played the game before in Calgary, got a shutout, and faced 44 shots to get the shutout. Luongo got a 6-3 win in Calgary. So their teams that we're playing are all coming in on win streaks because the starters, and then they're playing the backups and hoping that they'll have a great game.
I would like to note at this point, a long time ago, just came to me while you're saying all this, but one of the very first podcasts, we kind of talked about how is this going to work as far as Mason and Helly's minutes how many games they would get. We both thought, I believe I said a 60-40 split. You said 50-50, something like that. And even then I thought, well, but then shortly thereafter, and Helly started rolling. I think we talked about it, and you kind of said, well, they're going to get Mason back in there, obviously, because he's the guy they got. That's why he's here, kind of thing. And I said to you, like, I don't think so, man. I think they're just going to ride or die with Helly. Like, I know it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. But this is what Maurice does. He's not going to let a hot goalie sit on the bench. and then Helly took off and won a million games in a row and would lose like once in a blue moon, and the Jets went off, and then that was that. Mason had a couple games, and when he came in, he played okay, but the Jets lost the game. It wasn't on him, but then all of a sudden, it's like, well, now Helly is doing it, and I said way back when he coached the Carolina Hurricanes that he rode the shit out of Arturs Irvay, and that I thought he was going to do the same, and that was early in the season. You're looking at him now, and everybody's always asking, when are you going to put Mason in? When are you going to put Hutch? And we'll see. We're going to take a look at the schedule. You know, we're gonna have a little look.
We got some games in March.
And we'll get back to you about when maybe. But we feel like he's strong and he's prepared to be, you know, taking on a big portion of the schedule as a starting goalie. He prepared for this in the offseason. We're like, I don't think he ever wants Helly to not play again. You know, like if he had his way, he would have Hellebuck in net every single game. And it's only once in a blue moon where he has any use for Mason or Hutch. I just find it's hilarious. And everybody wants him to say, okay, like when's Mason, when's Hutch? When are we going to see the other guy play? And the answer is never if Maurice has his way.
Well, he might be.
And Helly's played great. So like, why would you want anybody else in net? Those guys have played fine. But lately, even in the games that the Jets lose, it's weird. He kind of don't you find sometimes Hellebuck, even when he's winning Stars of the Week and of the NHL, I still think he kind of flies under the radar. I think he flew under the radar at the All-Star game. Who's his Hellebuck from Winnipeg? A lot of guys I'm sure were saying, because he's definitely, his name's not Lundqvist or Price or a guy like that. And now and he's still flying under the radar all the time. And every single game he brings it, and he's been making these incredibly athletic saves, going post to post, making some big saves. And you don't really see it on the Sportsnet, you know, highlight of the night, those kind of reels. Here and there you'll see it, but it's just not talked about very much. So, I don't know. It's just worth noting once again that this guy is playing game in, game out, carrying the team on his back, because he doesn't even have an option right now to allow somebody to have a night off, man. Other guys get to have nights off. He doesn't have a time. He doesn't have that, you know?
Well, they could have started Eric Comrie.
But they aren't.
Yeah.
But
they could have.
And that's an option to bring him up. But Maurice, I guarantee Maurice goes to Helly, goes, how are you feeling? Are you good? And Helly every time goes, fuck yeah.
Well, they were on the homestand too. So a lot of when Maurice is doing, my understanding now, when Maurice is doing the decisions on the goaltending, he's going to factor in the amount of travel time.
But
the
Jets were,
and the Jets haven't had back-to-backs pretty much all month. They've been at home. This is the ninth of 10 games at home. It's not back-to-back. And the routine is, and then Helly doesn't even have to, you know, go for the pre-games thing. He's in his routine. It's in the same time zone. All the travel is not, he doesn't have to worry about it. So it was ideal conditions to just let Helly go this stretch.
Don't you find it weird that these guys are talking about how they're excited to just get back on the road? And when they're on the road, they always talk about how excited they are to come back to Winnipeg and play in front of their fans. But it's like, when I think about it, I look at it at from our perspective as like, you know, like just Joe Blow, normal guys, and like the amount that we work and how much daily grunt, like it's like Groundhog Day every day, you know, every week you're kind of doing the same thing with a few things, events here and there. But these guys, they're home for a couple weeks and it's like, holy fuck, they're getting bored. They're getting tired of playing at the MTS Center. We're worried about that kind of stuff. It just seems hilarious to me that they're, you know, they're anxious to get back on the road and just to get away from what their wives and their family. It's fucking hilarious. I don't know.
No, it's good. So Winnipeg came in second in the Central with two wins under their belts going into the game against Florida, 34-15-9 overall. In the first period, Tyler Myers, 18-13, bats a puck away from going into the Jets net right on the goal line, saves a goal right off the beginning of the game. The Jets get some chances, and in fact, Nick Petan gets it behind James Reimer, and Petrovic keeps it out by knocking it out on the goal line at 16:45. So the team swap, defenseman saving,
making game-changing plays,
goals.
Yeah, saving goals.
Great pressure by the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets do take the first penalty of the game. Tyler Myers gets tripping along the boards. There's first of three chances for Florida that Hellebuck makes, and Trocheck has a pair of them. And the first one was a big shoulder save. Couple more, he holds the puck. However, 11:03, the Florida Panthers open up the scoring in this game as Dennis Malgin gets his 10th on the power play. And Malgin is able to walk into the slot after getting a pass from Matheson and gets it over Helly. Just not a lot on the gap. And I know you were, I think before we were on air, you were talking about the goals in this game and the gap. Or was that the game, the next game?
I was talking about the Kings, but it actually is relevant to talk about here. They have allowed a few goals the last couple games after being rock solid for so long. And we've talked about this a little bit before too, about how you need defensive chemistry almost as much as offensive chemistry. And Tanev, his speed, Hendy and he played together for the entire year before the injury happened. And I really like Joel Armia as a PK guy. He's got an active stick. I think he's good on the PK, but he doesn't have the wheels that Tanev does. He doesn't attack the same way he does. He does a little bit more gap and then has an active stick, right? I've noticed when Hendy and Armia are together, you see it in the Kings game where he's just not getting out to the point quick enough and they're getting those shots through. He's not blocking. I also think Hendricks is a guy, he's an older guy that I think at times he wears out. I think he goes through the grind a little bit sooner than other guys do. I think that he needs a game off here and there, maybe even a couple games, depending on who they're playing. I think you probably get the best version of Hendy when he has a little bit more rest than everybody else. Makes sense. He's the oldest guy on the team, right? And I just think they're missing the speed of Tanev, and they attack differently. Tanev actually attacks guys at the blue line. He pressures extremely hard. He just flies around like the fucking Tasmanian devil, and it creates a way different element, and the Jets are missing that right now, and we felt it the last couple games, this game and then the game against the Kings.
The Jets do get the tying goal of the game as, you know what, I can't pronounce it if I look at it. I should have written it down. Pisek, and it's actually spelled with a couple of Y's.
Yeah, you said it right.
Yeah, but I have to think of I's instead of Y's. Gets a 2-minute penalty, cross-check on Perreault. Gets the Jets on the power play. And again, doesn't take very long. 7:54. Wheeler gets it along the sidewall. And again, you always talk about the threats on the Jets power play. He goes cross crease, but we're talking through the blue paint cross crease, so not his cross crease to go to line A. He actually goes cross crease to set up Kyle Connor for a tap in on the back door. Beautiful goal.
To me, this goal, again, I always like to give it, it's the play before the play, but Kyle Connor, he wins a battle down low with a guy, and he quickly spins and fires it up the wall to Wheels before that happens. And then astutely enough, and showing the hockey IQ that he has, he goes around the net on the opposite side, and he has his eyes on Wheeler the whole time, and Wheels finds the seam at the same time as Connor slips in from behind the net. So there was no D there. They had no time to pick Connor up. He was kind of hiding behind the play. Then as soon as he pops out, Wheeler puts it on the money, and Connor buries it in the back of the net. And that's just chemistry, knowing each other's game, and this is a perfect example of that sick goal on the power play.
That power play goal turns out to be Kyle Connor's 20th of the season. Not too shabby.
That one earns him some money. That earned him a bonus. That was part of he's checking off all the boxes this year, costing the Jets bonus money this year.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Actually,
I love incentive clauses. And Connor checked off 2 or 3 with that goal. Wait, what if he gets to 30? Cost him even more fucking money. He might get there, man, before the end of the year. Not outside the realm of possibilities.
Third in the team right now in goals. When you think of the goal scoring leaders on the team, and I know Scheifele was injured for a bit, and you think we got Blake Wheeler, and you think of Brian Little, the veterans, right? And yet it's Patrick Laine first, Nick Ehlers second, Kyle Connor third.
It's the kids.
Yeah.
Leading the way goal scoring wise. And obviously Scheifele was out for a long time. Otherwise he might be right where Laine is. But Kyle Connor there, 21 goals on the season. I mean, he's going to be pushing. He's going to be in the Calder discussion at the end of the year, too.
I don't think he is.
You don't think he'll get there?
I don't think they're going to. Well, I think he's going to put up numbers. I think he's going to put up 25 to 30.
One more
goals.
Thing, actually, just came to I wanted to mention was Nikolai Ehlers. Kyle Connor's going to outscore his rookie season. He's already right there, hey?
Yeah.
And he's going to come closer to Line A's numbers. I don't think he gets to 36, but I do think he has an outside chance of getting to 30. What was Line A? How many points did he get in his rookie season? I want to say 64?
Yeah, 36 goals.
I mean, Connor's not... I think he's going to fall short on both those numbers, but it's not going to be that far off.
And he's not going to get any call to conversation. He's not. I'm going to tell you that right now. You're going to be super disappointed on...
Yeah, it's all about Besser for sure. But I do think...
I do think if the Jets manage to finish first in the conference, if they can somehow overtake Vegas, or if they can win the division, I think he might be in the top three finalists. I do think he has a chance at being in the top three.
By the way, NHL end of the year awards have less weight, in my opinion, as the freaking All-Star game does. Absolutely nothing to do with the team sport of hockey. Don't care. Do not care who they decide to give the Vezina to or the MVP to. It would be nice if Winnipeg Jets get nominated for these things. And I know I sound awful saying it, but Kyle Connor could have a 30-goal season, put up 55 points, and not even get a nomination for Rookie of the Year this year.
Well, I tell you, if he gets the 30 and 55 and he doesn't get a snip, then there's something seriously wrong. And I get it, because the sports writers, it's primarily East Coast guys.
McAvoy will be on that ballot. The Islanders rookie, what's his name? I can't remember because we...
Barzell. Couldn't.
Barzell?
Yep.
Barzell, McAvoy, and Besser. There's your three nominations right now. What's the date? Let's do it. You know what? Do a Tim and Sid fucking moment here. February 22nd, 2018.
Those are the three obvious choices.
Brock Besser, money in Vancouver. Vegas
right now, those would be the three you'd take.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, Kyle Connor is an outside dark horse to crack the top three. I think he can push one of those guys out by the end of the season.
So, we have it. Like I said,
Besser. So I'm calling, he's saying, those are the three.
Connor knocks
one of those dudes out.
It's on lock. In fact, Charlie McAvoy could get injured again and not play another 15 of the 22 remaining regular season games. Or the Bruins have about 25, probably.
I think Connor can knock Barzell, though.
Look at the points. I think it's impossible.
Look where he's at right now. They're pretty fucking close.
I know they're close. But
which team's better?
The Jets are way better. And
Which team is going to win the division? It's not guaranteed, but who could? Islanders aren't winning the division.
I know, but they're going to say, and the knock on it when the Laine Matthews thing was, Laine has way better teammates to play with. Connor has way better teammates to play with.
Well, he is playing on a line with who is it? Isn't he playing with Tavares?
Well, Barzell, yeah.
Or is he playing with Ladin Eberle?
Regardless, it's not
like he's playing with Chums.
Yeah. Barzell's playing with Ladin Eberle, and they caused us fits.
I recall that their top six was incredible. Yeah. And so I don't think that it's a landslide like push on Connor's side. Well, he's playing with Wheeler and Shifley. Don't get me wrong. I personally think they're substantially better. They are better players, obviously. I don't know if it holds that much weight that he can't crack it, but just because I think maybe Barzell won't fade, but I do think Connor has an amazing second half. He's known for that. He did it in college. He did it the year before in his USHL, where his first half of the seasons are solid. And think about it. He scored how many goals in the first half of the season? About 15 goals or so?
15, yeah.
I think easily he can duplicate that in the second half or in the final stretch, put up some serious numbers and at least just be close. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's top five. You know, maybe he doesn't crack the top three. But I know with the awards thing, it's some politicking that goes on, right? It's a little bit of bullshit sometimes, right? But that being said, I still think, if Blake Wheeler is to be in the top three, or if Blake Wheeler is to win the MVP, I would be really proud of the fact that he actually got that. I don't think he will, for all the reasons we just said. Kyle Connor probably won't.
Connor McDavid's going to win the scoring title, even though this team's not going to make the playoffs, and he'll be MVP.
Well, he's got a long way to go to catch fucking the TBA boys or the Pittsburgh boys.
Two boys on that team lighting it up.
Kucherov, Stamkos, fucking Kessel.
They were still
Malkin and Crosby. They better not get fucking Grabner, as far away
as the Oilers are now. Like, technically, they're not mathematically eliminated, but they all but are already at this point. And I think I said in December they weren't making the playoffs. They were still talking about Connor McDavid, and if he continues to have as good of a in the last couple weeks for the rest of the year, his numbers individually are good enough to be most valuable player on a team not making the playoffs. That's how this league and their star selection goes.
Because he's the guy they want to pass the torch to from Sidney Crosby as the MVP, right? And he's an unbelievable dynamic player, and talent-wise, it'd be hard to put anybody up against the guy. That being said, if you're being accurate about the most valuable player, you have to keep in mind, you know, his team's record, because what kind of effect did you have on your team? I'm not saying you hang that on Connor McDavid. He's the one bright spot on that team. I mean, can you imagine right now in Edmonton how pissed you'd be now about the Taylor Hall, Adam Larson deal? Because I remember a buddy giving me the gears talking about Adam Larson. And after the Oilers made their cup run, fair enough. The guy was right at the time. Adam Larson was the win in that deal against Taylor Hall. But I said it. You know, 1 year doesn't make a trade. Could I have anticipated to go as well as it has for him to turn into their franchise player? No. But we're talking about a kid who won back-to-back Memorial Cups as the captain of his team for the Windsor Spitfires. He was the MVP back-to-back years. That says something about that guy. Did he lose that all in the first few years being part of a disastrous Oilers organization from top to bottom and going through some really tough years? Or did that just make him hungrier? And then after feeling like they didn't want him anymore, after having talks with him about re-signing him to a long-term deal, that happened just before he was traded. So he fully believed he was coming back long-term with the Edmonton Oilers, and then, boom, he was just gone. And he had multiple interviews I remember watching where you could hear sort of the hurt and the animosity that he had and about feeling like he had waited it out through the rough times and to be sold out after getting a player like McDavid, to not be there during the good times after helping build that franchise and not quitting on it, causing any problems. He was hurt by that shit, and I think that's been fuel to the fire. He's been unbelievable for an upstart Devils team that everybody had pegged at the start of the year for being out of the playoffs, and now here they are. They're right there on the cusp of making the playoffs. We're talking about Taylor Hall. Many people are talking about him as a possible dark horse MVP candidate, and just like we talked about earlier with Blake Wheeler, you know, he might not win, but to be mentioned in that talk, when you think back to that trade of losing him, and you think about him being in his prime and what's going to happen going forward, being multiple-time All-Star, the impact he's having on that franchise, he could be having that effect on the Edmonton Oilers. He could be riding shotgun a la Gretzky and Messier back in the day. You know, it could be McDavid and Hall. I felt like they really didn't give him a lot of time together. They didn't have a ton of success. The chemistry wasn't there off the hop, but that's too much talent to just give up on so quickly. And then you throw in Jordan Eberle and how much he's thriving with the New York Islanders. We talked about that. I know you're a huge Eberle fan. Just giving up on that guy too soon as well. He has one bad playoff, and he's been a perennial 20-goal scorer for you, been consistent for you. He's been known to be clutch. He was captain Canada just as much as Ryan Smith was, so clutch for the World Juniors. And he did a lot for that franchise too. He stuck it out through really lean years. So I thought two really solid players given up on way too soon, and now this year they're paying for it.
I'm going to back up your stats on Taylor Hall because he just got a milestone tonight. I go look it up. Devils Hall extends point streak to 20 games. So Taylor Hall picked up a goal and against Minnesota Wild tonight, Alex Stalock. Point streak to 20 games. So that's now 20 straight games with a point for Taylor Hall. And during that streak, Hall has 14 goals, 14 assists, 13th in the league in scoring, and he is now 24 more points up than any of his Devils teammates. By the way, the other thing that I want to mention for this is that public relations with the NHL says that Hall is the fifth player in the last 20 years to record at least 1 point in 20-plus consecutive appearances.
Couldn't find a spot for him in Edmonton, eh?
And he's 1 point away from tying his career high with his 26th goal for the season.
Hey, good on him, man. I'm happy for that kid. I'm happy he's doing well in New Jersey. I hope they do well in the playoffs. I don't give a fuck. I can't like any teams in the West. It's very tough. But like I said previous, the Oilers, you know, once the Jets left, they became that team for me. So I still want them to be a decent team. I don't want them to be bottom dwellers. I don't want to see what's happening to that franchise. And I don't want McDavid to have nobody to play with as well. While guys like Austin Matthews are thriving in Toronto and shit like that, I want him to have an opportunity to play with some good players and have a chance to, you know, I just don't want him to see him going through the shit that's happening right now. But c'est la vie.
So that's worth noting. As I had the opportunity to do some checking on stuff. By the way, late breaking news, just because you just mentioned Austin Matthews. He left the Leafs game tonight with a late injury.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Matthews.
After the game, after he blocked a shot and they were all losing it because a lot of the announcers were saying, fuck, we don't want Austin Matthews. He's actually leading their team in blocked shots, their forward squad. That's not the guy you want blocking shots.
So that's the, and again, it was having contacted, colliding with Cal Clutterbuck.
Oh, Clutterbuck.
Playing the Islanders. So, seems like the Islanders, and you bring up Matthews, and then this is the latest news that we've got on there. And the reason I'm checking this is because Grabner and Nash were out of the lineup, and we were talking
about that. And we're hoping at some point we'll refresh and see a deal is made.
On either of those guys, and if we can get that in the podcast tonight too. So we kind of got up on that. So the Jets had tied this game with Florida 1-1. There's a partial break before the end of the first period by Huberdeau of the Florida Panthers at the 4:25 mark. And the reason I mention Jonathan Huberdeau is that was the Know Your Enemy player that I picked from the Florida Panthers for this game to kind of keep an eye on. As I said, I was telling Warren that I wanted to pick a guy that I didn't know a ton about and get to know more about the players we're playing against, and kind of thought of Know Your Enemy, that Green Day track, and that's kind of where I came up with that idea on it. I'm not inserting the song in there, but that's exactly
what... You mean Rage Against the Machine?
No, it was Do You Know Your Enemy? Do You Know the Enemy? That's a Green Day song.
Oh, that one?
Yeah.
I was thinking of Know Your Enemy.
Oh.
Know Your Enemy by Rage Against the Machine. Oh. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
That's more than one song.
Way more badass.
Yeah.
Okay. That one's all right. The Green Day one's good too.
So Jonathan Huberdeau was a third pick in the 2011 draft by the Florida Panthers. And actually, there was some conversation that the Florida Panthers had kind of gone off the board picking up Jonathan Huberdeau in that third spot. And some guys had dropped that were ranked higher. He is from St. Jerome, Quebec, Canada. Quebec, I should say. 55 games going into this, 18 goals, 35 assists for 53 points. So he's having a fairly good season. Left shot and plays left wing. Averaging just under about 20 minutes per game and does get some time on the power play. Has 4 power play goals even this year in those 18. And averages about 3.29 in time on ice for the power play. Again, that's per game over the season. But just under 20 average ice time. So one of the lesser known Florida Panthers, but a really talented player. And again, another high-end draft pick. By the way, the guy that I picked for the LA game as well, also a first-rounder. So I've managed to find first-round picks that generally aren't really well-known.
Huberdeau was the number one center on the World Juniors Team Canada team. Hey, he was highly touted, actually. For a while there, they thought he was going to go first overall in the draft. You said the draft, they actually were surprised. I think it maybe fell off a little bit. I can't remember what happened in the second half of that draft year season, but I know that Huberdeau did put up big points in junior. And I remember watching, he's pretty dynamic. That just World Junior team wasn't as solid. They were one of the ones that did win gold, so they aren't as memorable, I guess you could say. But he was a solid player on that team for sure. And I love his game in Florida. We've talked about it a couple times.
I would love to have
him. Right? You talked about it in your sort of dream package. Involved Ekblad and Huberdeau. And because he threw Huberdeau on top of it, I said that's a bit of a dream. Like, good luck getting both those guys off of Florida. Despite some of their decision-making over the last year, I find that would be a fleecing and a half. The combos you were talking, I would love it. But if we did get Huberdeau for something, that's another great piece. It's hard not to think about that. It's trade deadline. We can't stop talking about all these what-ifs. But
the other thing on that, he's 24 years of age, and so he's got a few years in his prime. So that's kind of when I was mapping out my dream deals. I'm trying to find guys that are on the just under the 25-year mark as guys to bring in that you can actually have for a few years. So that's kind of my thought process on it. I haven't looked at it.
Did you say he's rolling on the left wing right now, or is he playing center?
He's left wing, yeah.
For some reason, I thought he was a center. I think he was a center in junior. So they rolled him to the wing, similar to Roslo, but I think he can play both.
That's interesting. All this whole podcast has just been going off of each other like we normally do. Because the next thing on my thing, getting back to the game against Florida, was that Scheif had set up Roslo. And he fans just in the slot at 3:43. So the first period ends a 1-1 tie between Florida and Winnipeg. And you're kind of just waiting for the Jets to kind of just, like they did the game before, open up the floodgates. And this game, I remember watching on the Sunday night. And again, I was just, I'm not going to give a plug for a business that doesn't pay for us to be doing this. But I was out at one of the lounges and people talking to me about doing the podcast. And I said, yeah, I expect at some point that the Jets will outmatch Florida again like they did the night before with these lineups, that you can't just contain these three lines. And again, this is another example, even when the lines are even on line changes now, so then you end up having Scheifele out there with Rosell on a line change, or you end up having Connor out there with, you know, Ehlers on a line change or some other combination. And it's just, it's full on offense with this lineup. We'll talk about the drawbacks against a team like LA, like we said we would earlier, but against teams that don't have four lines to match up against the Jets, this offensive setup just,
I feel like the Jets, they come at people in waves.
Yeah.
And like you said earlier, I feel like they wear them down. There's been plenty of games over the last little while where they kind of managed to score maybe one goal, two goals max in that first period, and then they just keep coming at them, keep coming at them. That's why the Jets are such a successful third period team as well. So they just wear them down. Even though that often I feel like they let off the gas a little bit in that second period. It's been kind of one of those negative tendencies. You don't like to focus on the negative too much on this podcast, but we both agree that the second period has been sort of the Achilles heel for the Winnipeg Jets. But it's like that third period, that other team's just done, man. It's like having a, you know, in a UFC fight or a boxing match, it's like, you know, the deeper the rounds, the better the champion gets, you know, and the more depth you have, the more you can spread out the minutes, you know, and it's just more tiring playing in your own end. When you're pinned in your own end, you're trying to handle that kind of speed. Jets have the speed to burn.
Second period, the Jets get the pressure right back applied in this 1-1 game. Ben Chiarot has a shot to the net, and then Andrew Kopp can't finish on a wraparound. Good chance. And then just a little over a minute later, Mark Scheifele is just tied up on a back check as a pass from Blake Wheeler's coming through. At the 15:21 mark, though, Nick Ehlers gets a shot off from the far wall side boards. It goes off of Florida's defenseman McCoshin and manages to handcuff Reimer. So Nick Ehlers with his 23rd goal. Myers and Morrissey get the assist on that. Jets get up 2-1, first lead in the game for the Winnipeg Jets. And that, as I said, the second period, at least in this game, the Jets and the game before, the second period wasn't their issue.
That's a huge goal for the Jets, too. Throughout the year, they've had games where they've had some really bad luck. And the game prior, Blake Wheeler got the nice fortunate bounce when he kind of shot it from behind the goal line and it went in. And then here's Nikolai Ehlers, similar type of situation. It redirects off a guy and it banks up in the air and goes in the net, right? So these are things, I mean, and this is a tie game and now you have the lead. And I think that kind of just loosened the Jets up. And then from there, they started to, you know, push the pedal to the metal, you know.
But the game is still going to be a lot closer than that. Dmitry Kulikov at 13:30 had a great back check on McKenzie when the Jets had made a slightly, well, not slightly, they made a bad line change. As the season's gone on, we've talked less and less about bad line changes. I think the first three podcasts, anytime there was like goals against the Jets where, oh, bad line change leads to a goal. Jack Roslovic takes a penalty at 12:48 on Pysyk again. Pysyk had been the one guy that took the penalty in the first period. He actually draws one on Rosell. Florida is able to get set up on the power play in a 12:26, a point shot, and it rebounded off a Meyer stick. And then Dandanov bats at it, and originally it was accredited to Dandanov as his 16th of the year on the power play. However, it actually went off of Alec Barkov's skate in the crease and was later given to him from Dandanov and Yandel.
It's pretty gross for Dandanov. He does a lacrosse type fucking crazy slam it in out of the air and it goes in off of Barkov's foot and he's not doing anything except putting his fat ass in front of the net. I just found that funny. I was like, fuck, if you're him, nice. I mean, and that one you can't be too pissed off if you're a Jets fan. I mean, that's just a nice goal. It is what it is.
It also takes away Trocheck's assist on the goal, by the way.
Yeah, that's the guy that's always the most pissed. It's the guy that originally had the secondary assist, and then they lose it because it banks off a skate lace or some shit.
The Jets, however, get back on their horses. Wheeler driving to the net with, you know, basically seconds after that goal was scored. And then the Jets are buzzing, and Perreault ends up taking a loose puck penalty on a tripping at 10:32. Pair of heli pad saves, and the Jets are able to kill off the penalty. Mark Scheifele, 7:06, on his own, goes in on Reimer, and after Reimer holds it, and I don't know if the Jets were making a line change or whatever, but he takes a couple extra taps at Reimer while he's covering it. And as the play stops, you can just see that the only people around are like four guys from the Florida Panthers as the play's blowing down. It's like, oh shit, what's going to happen? I don't know if you remember that, but.
No, that's the thing though. Like, Scheifele's a good dude. You know, he's like your poster boy guy. But he, every now and then, he plays with his little bit of fuckery. You know, that's one of those plays, a little bit of fuckery. He's just like, ah, and he throws those little quick couple slashes. Not like brutal, but just enough to be an irritant and piss people off. And he does it usually with a smirk on his face at the same time. Yeah. I think he likes getting engaged. He likes it when people try to face wash him, and then he shoves him back and gets him pumped up. But sometimes I think he just does that to get people going, you know, to get everybody a little bit more jacked up.
But it's just amazing because you got four Florida Panthers just like staring
at you. Yeah, it's not really good timing to do it when you don't have any teammates around you.
It was like, the timing on it was like, oh shit. So
I should have picked this a little bit better. This was not the right spot.
And again, we're in a 2-2 all game at this point. High end scoring chances for both teams as they trade away them. 6:03, Toby Enstrom. And I'm actually calling him Toby from now on. His play has been so good, I am calling him by his nickname. Toby has a backhand, he can't get it in. What I like about that high end scoring chance is that it was such a great pinch. And other than finishing it off, Toby made a great play. He was right in the slot, right in front. And I just felt bad. I'm like, man, if he was going to get his first of the year, that would have been a beauty. Didn't happen. Then, at 4:19, Connor Hellebuyck. And this may be the turning point. I know how you said that Connor Hellebuyck doesn't make the highlight reels, and we never talk about his big save. But you know what? TSN and the turning point of this game. Hellebuyck talked about it to a man after all the post-game interviews. Everybody talked. And actually, even between intermissions, they were interviewing Josh Morrissey. Sarah Leske asked him a question about this save that we're going to talk about that Connor Hellebuyck makes at this point. With 4:19 left, he is talking about the save as a turning point in the game. And then
the save of the year.
Yeah.
And that's saying something. He's had a few amazing saves, but this one, when you see it on the replay in slow motion, I feel like every replay I saw, I got a greater appreciation for the difficulty of the save. He admitted after the game that he kind of stayed locked onto the shooter for longer than he would have liked, which is why he had to react the way he did. But when you look at that, I mean, he's reaching back full extension, and that puck's about to go over the goal line, and he uses his strength to keep his arm solid so it doesn't fly back into the net. And it's a game changer. If that goes in the net, you're talking about a huge momentum swing. Instead, the Jets ride that momentum, and that's what sets them off. That's what gets them going.
So Morrissey gets a follow-up question from Sarah Orleski after talking about this save, and then he proceeds to just talk about the save more, and that basically ends the interview because she only got time for two questions. He basically, how he kept us in that huge save, and then we get the late goal, but it's really all about how he saved. Then she asked him another question,
about how he saved.
And he's still just like, without Helly making that save.
I think everybody, it was one of those, whoa, that was pretty sick.
Connor Hellebuyck robbed McKenzie on a pass on a wire from Dandanoff and makes that huge glove save. And he does go side to side, cross crease, fully stretched out, makes a glove save, highlight reel, TSN turning point, whatever you want to call it. Huge save. And it does allow the Jets to actually leave the second period on a even more of a high, because the Jets are able to then get a tripping call on from Florida. Bukestad hauls down Wheeler in the neutral zone, 3:35 left in the period. The Jets are on a power play with the momentum of that big save. The second unit comes out, and the only thing the second unit didn't do is score on that power play. For a minute and a half, they were all over the passing, everything, chances, nothing went in. And Scheif has a chance set up by Wheeler. Now, as the power play is expiring, and I mean just expiring, because the time on the Jets' third goal, go-ahead goal, is a whole 4 seconds after the penalty expires. So they are still up. Buff does a great job to keep it in the zone, and Wheeler goes to that same play in the slot as the power play expires, and then is able to get it over to Mark Scheifele. And what I mean by going to the same spot, the shot that Scheif didn't score on at the 2 minute mark, 30 seconds later, Wheeler pretty much sets up Scheif in that exact same spot again in the slot, and Scheifele's able to put that one home.
Yeah, he refocused the lens.
Not a power play goal. The power play guys were on the ice. Scheifele from Wheeler, secondary assist from Byfuglien. But that play, he went back to the well. Again, you got to remember, they've done the cross seam to Kyle Connor, like through the crease on that beauty backdoor one. Laine's getting overplayed. It opens up Scheifele, and Scheifele scores.
Yeah, you got to pick your poison, right? This exact sequence that you're talking about with the second unit power play absolutely dominating prior to that, that's where home ice advantage matters. That's why the Jets want it in the playoffs, because with that sustained pressure and all those opportunities that the second unit was getting, you could just feel the energy in the crowd building and building and building. And what happens as a player, you're itching to get on the ice when you're on the bench. When you're that first unit, when they get out there, they're still riding that wave, that euphoria that's running through the building. It's loud in there. It's electric. And it just gives you that little extra something, that little extra laser focus. That was a part of why they scored. I would say that second unit contributed to the first unit scoring that power play goal.
Before the period ends, Dustin Byfuglien has another chance doing a spinorama, gets a backhand, and he's just stopped. It's just, Dustin Byfuglien's a big, big guy. Him doing like 360 spins, still gets a backhand away. Just another great game by Dustin Byfuglien. That gets the Jets into the third, up 3-2, and then, you know, I don't know, I guess the Jets let out their Gators, really, on Florida, because they just unleashed the third period on the Panthers, and it was Jets. And so we just quickly...
That's when you use the term floodgates.
Yeah, you know what? I just think I've been overusing floodgates. It's like, my floodgates is like Dennis Bayek's Carom.
Really? I haven't even noticed you use it that
much. Oh, yeah, yeah. Go listen to the previous podcast, and I think every
time... So if we ever, sitting around, we're just going to... be narcissistic and listen to ourselves a million times. Yeah. We're making a drinking game or something every time you say floodgates.
You do not want to play a drinking game when I'm using the word floodgates.
Right.
Sunday nights and putting up 7 goals is another thing. Actually, that's worth noting, and I can't remember, but...
the touchdown stat.
Yeah.
The Jets this year put up a touchdown 5 times.
And it's 1 per month. That's the interesting thing. But since the beginning of the year, so they've got October, November, December...
Well, last year, to put it in perspective, last year the Jets did it once. The year previous, they didn't have one game where they had put up 7. The year before that, it was 1.
Yeah.
I believe the year before that was 2. So right now, with 20 games left in the season or so, they've already put up 5.
And they probably will get one in March. I just have a feeling. I don't know if they can get one in April because there's a whole 4 games or something like that. Or 3 in that last little stretch. Third period, however, at 16:45, Wheeler gets set up by Scheifele, and he just puts it over the net. Blake Wheeler is able to get that puck retrieval back, and then he waits, and then sets up Kyle Connor coming in for the 1T. Actually, sorry, Wheeler would get it to Myers for a slap pass to Connor for the 1T. Have I got that right? No, Myers got it to Wheeler. Wheeler gets it over.
Yeah, slap pass for Myers to Wheeler over to Connor.
Yeah. That's exactly right. You got it there. Kyle Connor's 21st second of the game. Still not getting any call or consideration.
Well, and another underrated guy here is Tyler Myers. Nobody ever talks about Tyler Myers. The guy that is always talked about by broadcasters from other teams is they talk about Dustin Byfuglien. And you know what? Lately, Dustin Byfuglien has been an X factor in a positive way for the Jets. But Tyler Myers, right there with them, putting up the same kind of
point production.
And like, primary assists.
You know, the best description was when Paul Maurice said, it's like, well, we got two defensemen signed in the offseason. And he said Dmitry Kulikov and Tyler Myers. Because he actually acknowledged that Tyler Myers playing a full year is going to be a huge difference for this team. And by the way, Tyler Myers and Josh Morrissey are the only two guys this year to play in all the games defensively for the Winnipeg Jets. It is like having a getting a defenseman pick up in the offseason.
You can't teach 6'7 with the wingspan and with the speed of the way he skates for a guy his size.
So let's just continue talking about Tyler Myers. 13:57, Tyler Myers finds Brian Little in front on a cycle. Little waits for Reimer to get out of position, and then so it's like it's an inside outside, and then he backhands it in. It's a gorgeous goal. Brian Little's 13th of the year, and I still think he's going to have the potential to get to 20 before the end of the year, especially with his line mates. Tyler Myers, he gets the primary assist.
Well, he created it from rolling down, and he was behind the net when he made this pass out to Brian Little. That's just a good pinch, and like you said, a good cycle on the play to be in that spot. That's confidence. And that move you just talked about with Brian Little, I think earlier in the year, he might have slammed that into the logo when he was struggling. I think that shows the confidence in his game, because you have to be to not rush that shot, to not try to just immediately one time that in the net, to know that you have the time, the presence of mind there. And then, yeah, he avoids the poke check. Reimer tries to go to make a quick poke check on him. He brings it back and it fucking buries it. That was a beauty.
Florida does have a chance where McCann rings it off the post at 12:46. At this point, it's already 5-2 for Winnipeg. Blake Wheeler drives the net at 10:59. He has a rebound right in front of the net. He's the only guy there. Open net. He puts it in with his glove. No goal. You don't even need to review that. He put the puck in the net with his glove. But it's entertaining.
That's pure instinct. That's like when you're going to block a shot. And that's actually exactly how I broke my my middle finger. It was just a brain dead moment just like that. Was I dropped down and I knew it was coming. The D had a huge shot. I knew it was coming. And you're not supposed to hold your gloves out with your palm facing out, because
no protection.
You're leaving your fingers exposed. But I was a baseball player growing up too. So my natural reaction was to try to catch it with my left hand where I'd have the glove. And boom goes the dynamite, fucking snap middle finger later. And that's a natural instinct. And that was totally what Blake Wheeler did there. It was just like, there's the puck smacking in the net. Fuck, that's not, it happened. All those thoughts you could see happen in like milliseconds. And then you could see them all laughing at the bench. Like, why? If you could have found a way to just hit the brakes on that thought process, you could have used a stick probably and just butt-ended it into the net.
Yeah, just use the back of the skate. Back skate motion. Get up and skate away.
Accidentally back into the...
As you're skating out of the crease. And that would count.
There's so shove their player into the puck. Whatever. Yeah. There were better options besides punting it with your hand into the net.
9:33. Bufflin drives to the net. Misses. And he takes out Reimer. And when I say takes out Reimer, when you see the review of this play, Dustin Bufflin glances and actually makes an effort to get out of the way of making contact. But Dustin Bufflin, after James Reimer dives on delay.
In Winnipeg. Winnipeg. This is where he's from.
Goalie interference. It's like when you see that replay, it's like there's this glance and Bufflin's trying to avoid all contact and there's a glance. And then there's like 1 second, 2 second. Reimer, fall back, flailing onto the ice.
I would have thought for sure he played European fucking soccer. Trying to draw a red flag. What the hell is that shit? From Winnipeg. And the crowd goes off and just boos him after seeing the replay. Like, talk about not having a nice fucking homecoming.
Florida has another chance on this phantom power play. Trocheck goes off the post after a great pass from Huberto, which is why I love Huberto. So Trocheck had no luck getting on the score sheet tonight in this game. And then 8:18, while shorthanded, Blake Wheeler went 1-on-2. Now, he didn't score, but he splits a D and got a shorthanded chance against two of the Florida's power play defenders. Pretty impressive play. 6:58, the power play is over. Enstrom springs Ehlers, and Ehlers just, you know, blasts one from inside the blue line. That doesn't go in, but the Jets just continue to pressure. At 4:33 on an odd man rush, Roslo gets a pass to Perreault, who gets it between the pad and blocker and in. Matty Perreault gets his 16th, and this is what I'm talking about. Pick your poison, because there's Roslovic and Perreault working together for Perreault's 16th of the year.
Well, this is a perfect example of defense leads to offense, because on this play, Roslovic is back checking hard, and he picks the guy's pocket in the defensive zone before springing Perreault with the puck. And then because of Roslo's breakneck speed and his effort to get back up in the play with Perreault to create that 2-on-1 and actually gets ahead of the play by a couple feet, Perreault is able to look off Roslo as the pass option, which makes Reimer, you can see it on the replay, he slightly cheats and then he puts it in short side. So that's great patience by Perreault, knowing that that's the case. If you could just give it a little bit of time for Roslo to get to that spot. And right there, defense leads to offense. And that's a young kid, you know, playing only his first handful of games really in the NHL.
And the Jets don't stop there. 1:35 left in the game, more pressure. And Matty Perreault creates a turnover. He actually gets it over to Brian Little, who gets it to Patrick Laine, who goes forehand, backhand. And then he puts it in for his 27th. Beautiful goal by Laine. And again, lots of patience, but at this point we're...
When you saw that goal, though, to me, when I saw that goal, Laine sort of almost like his smirk and almost lack of excitement over the goal. Like he was somewhat irritated, like everybody had scored before him. It's like, well, finally I fucking got one. That's what the face looked like. Like, well, I should have had one by now, I guess, whatever. And it was like a slow motion play. And that play to me was a sign of a team that the Panthers that were already thinking about packing their bags and heading off to their next destination, because at this point on that particular goal there wasn't much defense and Laine just walked in, nice little quick hands backhand goal, but it was funny.
Still a good pass from Brian Little, and
for
Patrick
sure
Laine's in a good
great
spot.
Play.
And I do like the fact that Patrick Laine at that point, it's almost like, as you said, because he has so much time and space, he's just like, well, what can I do, because I better make this look pretty.
What I really liked about at the end of this game is that I thought it was a great decision. I'm sure you have that written down there. Paul Maurice decides to throw out towards the end of the game. He throws out his fourth line and gives him a little bit of love on a power play late in the game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know,
I thought
I thought it was a really
respectful decision by Paul Maurice. I think it not only was it respect to his players, but it's a respect for the opposition. You put up a 7 spot on them. There's no reason to throw out your hot first or second unit to pile it on and get an extra goal. There's no reason for that. And, you know, to give your fourth line guys like Hendy and Patan at the time, you know, give them a couple extra minutes.
Power play time. Nick Patan actually did get some power play line when he was playing fourth line in his first go around with the Jets before he got sent down to the Moose, because we had a lot more healthier bodies. But I thought it was really nice because it gave Matt Hendricks power play time. And actually Joel Armia sees some power play time too. The only guy that was really, is there really Matty Hendricks getting power play time?
Yeah, and I think they had the third unit defensive pair out there too.
I think it was Sherrod and Kulikov
that were up there as well.
And you know what? I didn't mark it down, but I remember at the time being like, oh yeah, we're on a power play. And yeah, the third D pairing and our fourth line are on the ice. But at that point, the game was over. And that is in between goals 6 and 7. At that point, I guess I just didn't even mark down the penalty, because I'm like, as you said, the blowout was on. 7-2 final for the Jets. So the Jets, 6-1 winners over Colorado, 7-2 over the Florida Panthers. Bufflin gets back on the top of the minutes, by the way, 23:40, right in his wheelhouse. Just under him in the minutes was Tyler Myers at 20 and a half minutes. Morrissey just under 20 minutes. Enstrom at 18:49. And then Sherratt and Kulikov just under 18. A little more spread out on the
minutes. Yeah, I love that balance. Those minutes sound solid to me.
Tim Bigelow, Warren Smith. This is the First Class Podcast, all things Winnipeg Jets hockey. Ramping up hour 2 with this Florida Panthers game. We're going to come back in hour 3, take a look at the Los Angeles Kings game versus the Winnipeg Jets, the last of the 10 game for the homestand for the Winnipeg Jets. Then we're going to take a look ahead at the 3 matchups against Central Division teams, 2 of those on the road, St. Louis, Dallas, and then coming back home, the Jets will play the Nashville Predators in MTS Bell Place. Also, we're going to keep our eyes peeled to Monday and possible situations as it relates to Jets adding players before the NHL trade deadline. That's all coming up.